Welcome to KUOW Speakers Forum, a venue for spoken word presentations in many forms. We feature writers, artists, storytellers, and thinkers recorded at events around Seattle. I'm your host, John O'Brien. From national to local media, the White House to the DMV, America is inching towards an acknowledgement and acceptance of LGBTQI rights. 37 states now allow same-sex marriage, and the Supreme Court will weigh in on a constitutional right this summer. President Obama used the term transgender for the first time in a State of the Union address this past January. Oregon's Kate Brown recently became the first openly bisexual governor in the United States. Last week, famed Olympian Bruce Jenner came out as a trans woman, with the blessings, sort of Rick Santorum. And in one telltale sign of the pulse of the nation, the greeting card company Hallmark featured a young transgender man in a recent Mother's Day video campaign. The list of accomplishments is long, but the struggle for LGBTQI rights remains. Beyond threats of bullying and violence, there are no national laws protecting the LGBTQI community from discrimination. It is legal in a majority of states to discriminate against LGBTQI people in the areas of employment, housing, and public accommodation. Joe Wenke is a writer, activist, and the founder of TransUber, a publishing company that promotes lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex community rights. His most recent book is The Human Agenda: Conversations About Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. In it, Wenke and his guests tell stories of the search for shared humanity in an increasingly polarized world. Wenke argues there is no homosexual agenda or transgender agenda, there is just the human agenda, summed up by the concept of our common and unalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Joe Wenke spoke about bridgeable divides and the LGBTQI community at Town Hall Seattle on April 17, 2015. He was joined on stage by transgender model and activist Giselle Alicia and Seattle Children's Hospital gender specialist Aiden Key. This conversation was presented by Town Hall and University Bookstore as part of the Civics series. Thanks to Kevin Mitchum for our recording. Here, Town Hall's Edward Wolcher starts the introductions.
Now to introduce our guests further and also say a few words about one other upcoming program we have in conjunction with them, I'd like to welcome our wonderful partner from Gay City, Susan Reese, who's the deputy director there, who will carry on the program. Susan, thanks so much.
Hello, I'm Susan, as you've already learned. And I just wanted to take a minute to tell you a little about Gay City, in case you are not familiar. Gay City is celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. It's an incredible milestone in our 20-year history built on a foundation of our core values. We're inclusive, innovative, holistic, and multicultural. Our clients, staff, supporters, and volunteers represent the incredible diversity of the LGBTQ community we're proud to provide service to. Gay City is a place at the intersection of the many different facets of Seattle's LGBTQ community. We provide a space for people to be who they are, but we also provide the opportunity for people to interact with other members of the LGBTQ community in ways that may challenge them and help them become their whole selves. This is why hundreds of people use our Michael C. Wiedemann LGBT library every year, and why we provide more than 1,800 referrals every year through our LGBT Resource and Referral Center. This is why we provide 1,000 free HIV tests in the first quarter of this year, and our biggest quarter in 11 years of testing. This is why so many people in our community say that Gay City feels like home. We're very proud of our newest program, Gay City Arch, which will be wrapping up its second season next month with a production called Turn Back Boys, about a magical time-traveling genderqueer boy band. We've also recently announced our call for submissions for Gay City Arts Season 3, Queer Revolution. You can find the details for that at gaycityarts.org/arts. We'll be back here again on Saturday, May 9th at Town Hall for Wordplay, our fourth annual spoken word poetry festival, which is being co-presented this year by our friends here at Town Hall. WordPlay is a one-day spoken word festival that includes two workshops, an artist reception, and performances from queer poets from different recovery backgrounds who will take to the mic to speak truth about their experiences. Tara Hardy will be one of the performers, FYI, and trust me all, she is not someone you want to miss. You can find more information at gaycity.org/wordplay or register for this free event on Town Hall's website. And now for our guests. Joe Winke is a writer, an LGBTQI rights activist, and a social critic. He is the founder and publisher of Trans Uber, which focuses on LGBTQI rights and equality for all publications. And he is the author of books of poetry, novels, and satires. Giselle Alicia, also known as Giselle Extravaganza, is a model, an actress, a painter, an event producer, a ballroom personality, and a transgender activist. She has been seen recently in Vogue and Vanity Fair, where she was a part of a groundbreaking Barney's campaign, which featured transgender models. And over her career, she has worked with leading fashion photographers and designers. Aiden Key is the founder of Gender Diversity, a nonprofit dedicated to providing support and educational services regarding transgender and gender nonconforming children. He produces for the Gender Odyssey Family Conference for families raising a trans child and Gender Odyssey Professional, an annual two-day conference for professionals seeking to expand their knowledge of gender variance and transgender identities. So please give a warm welcome to Joe Winke, Giselle Alicia, and Aiden Key.
Hey everybody, I'm Joe Winke, and it is just great to be here. Thank you, Susan, for those wonderful introductions. I'm really pleased that everybody came out tonight. Thank you so much. And I'd really love this to just be a very open and freewheeling conversation. So we're sort of going to kick it off here first and then open it up to everyone. And let me say, too, I'm just absolutely delighted to be here with two of the most amazing people on this planet, Aiden Key and the beautiful Giselle Alicia. So, by way of introduction, I'd just like to share with you a little bit of the context for tonight's conversation. So, as was mentioned a moment ago, I write a lot of books, and for a long time, I wanted to do a book on sexual orientation and gender identity. And I'm kind of a radical guy, and I can be pretty divisive when I want to. And I love debate, but I was thinking, despite the fact that we've made so much progress, particularly with marriage equality, sexual orientation and gender identity are still really divisive subjects. And like probably just about everybody here, I'm really concerned that as a culture and a country, we're becoming increasingly divisive. So I was thinking, how can I find a way to address these topics, but in a way that would really open up common ground? And maybe I can do that if I can locate our shared humanity. And I was thinking, what better way of doing that than simply having conversations? Because when you think about it, when we're having a conversation, we're telling stories. And storytelling is really the fundamental way that we communicate. So I was thinking, look, if I could reach out to really diverse people, really different people, but all within the LGBTQI community, and we simply tell stories about ourselves, we share our dreams, our aspirations, personally and professionally, then I think people of good heart and minds who maybe don't understand certain things or maybe are a little bit narrow-minded because of the way they were brought up might say, you know something, I thought that person was very different from me, but I felt that way too. I've thought that. And we can kind of sort of pass over to each other's point of view and reach a new place. So that's really the genesis of the human agenda. And I sort of look at tonight's conversation on gender identity here in Seattle and beyond as a kind of bringing to life or a live version, you know, of the studio album of the human agenda. So that's the way I look at it. And just a word about the human agenda, and then we'll get rolling here. I was doing an article for the Huffington Post about a year and a half ago on the old hate speech phrase, the homosexual agenda. And the fact that you still see this, if you go on Right Wing Watch, just about every single day, and there are all these radio shows of hate speech using this term. And I was thinking, okay, there was no vast conspiracy, which we refer to as the homosexual agenda. People aren't that organized, really. We're not all communicating. We're all just sort of living our lives. But there really isn't a homosexual agenda to begin with. There's just the human agenda, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, we all have the same goals in life. And so I started tweeting, the homosexual agenda is the human agenda, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The transgender agenda is the human agenda, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, thus the title of the book. So without further ado, I'd like to get rolling here. But I'd like to begin with something that's actually kind of a difficult thing to talk about, a little challenging, and that is, what the heck is gender identity to begin with? Because lots of really progressive educated people don't know what it means really and don't know what the difference is between biological gender and gender identity. So I'd like to maybe start off with that. And Aidan, if you could begin talking about it just a little bit, we'll share our thoughts on that to kick this off.
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Joe. Gender identity. Well, in the state of Washington, it's in our anti-discrimination language. I think that probably the majority of the people involved in approving that had no idea what that meant either. Gender identity, gender expression. Okay, sounds good. It's really very simple. It's, what is my internal sense of my own gender? What is so radical about that is that I can state that, but will all of you believe that? Will all of you receive that? And give me permission to name that? Very simply, if you want to know the really amazing way that children understand gender identity, I've heard this story from one of the parents who has participated in our support groups, where a tug of war was going on between them and their 7-year-old. And this kid finally, hands on the hips, says, when are you going to understand? I may have the body of a girl, but I have the heart and mind of a boy. That's the turning point for that family. That is the very, very simple concept that we all as a society need to respect and accept. Can we absolutely, 100%, just receive what someone says to us as their truth?
So asking people to believe us when we say, this is who I am. It's really that basic and that fundamental. Giselle?
To me, the question was the gender identity.
Yeah, what does it mean to you?
Well, to me, gender identity means like an evolution of just my own consciousness of knowing who I really am. As I never knew that I could, that transsexuals existed when I was a child. So it's through knowledge that I found that this is who I really was. And, you know, to me, growing up in a Latin household, you know, I was brought up to believe that, you know, boys should act a certain way and girls should act a certain way. And to me, I never accepted that because I always felt differently inside. I mean, I really knew that I wanted to be transgender actually at the age of 15. I didn't know this existed when I was a child. But I did have transgender tendencies growing up. So to me, it's just an evolution of who I am.
And it's very hard to discover who you are if you don't have any models for that, right? And so I think that's the reason that so many transgender people start out identifying perhaps as gay and then evolve in toward to realize that they are transgender. But whatever one self-identification, but particularly if you're within the LGBTQI community, I think the most important thing is support from one's family. Now, it's obvious that that's important for everybody, but if you do not identify with your biological gender, which is, you know, we call people who do cisgender, and you are transgender, supportive family is a life and death issue. And this is what you are working with every single day. So could you just talk a little bit about how important it is? Because in our previous conversations, I've brought up this term dysphoria, you know, this idea that psychologists feel that if you're transgender, you're necessarily uncomfortable with your body. And I was thinking, well, if a child identifies at a very early age, let's say a biological male, and says, I'm really a girl, what parent, however progressive or understanding, is going to say, yeah, you're right, you are actually a little girl, not think that their child is confused? So that's with the most understanding parents. But without that, it can lead in a very tragic direction. So, but what do you find when parents really support children in their gender identity? Aiden.
Too many thoughts running through so rapidly. What it is a metamorphosis for those parents. It's their examination of life as they know and understand it. That's what happens for parents. What an incredible motivator, your little child. There's just not anything more powerful that I've seen so far, especially in understanding broader LGBT community, than a parent saying, wow, I've got to step up. My child is suffering and they're 6 years old. What six-year-old needs to suffer? Because of who they innately are. So having that parent step into a courageous moment and say, I'm hearing you, I'm listening, and I'm going to figure some things out is so profound, because that is helping to establish that core resiliency, that sense of self, and that courage to go out and face the rest of the world. Those children, even at ages that young, have already for several years recognized the pushback in other ways, either through peers, through messages in the media, family members, extended family members, siblings, you name it. They're already experiencing that pushback if their gender expression and their identity is not aligning with what everyone else expects. So how do you incorporate that as a child? How do you find your own strength in that and confidence if you don't have someone there saying, you're perfect and you're beautiful just the way you are? We're going to figure out the rest of the world.
So you really need that support from the very beginning. And Giselle, in the book, one of the things that you said that I found most moving really relates to this issue of the importance of family. And you said, transgender people are real people. We have mothers, we have fathers, we have sisters, we have brothers, we have families, we have somewhere that we came from. That's the starting point. And I know you had very strong support within your family, and particularly from your mother. Could you just talk a little bit about that and what that has meant to you?
Okay, well, my mother has always supported me, and that was everything to me, because I had a home to go to, I had a support system, I had people that loved me and welcomed my lifestyle. I didn't give my mother a choice. I actually told my mother, I said, you had me, so you're going to have to deal with what I've become, because you knew that I am a child of this world. And we all know that this world is not perfect. So if you're going to bring in a child into this world, you should support them no matter what. It was not their decision to come into this world. You have made this decision consciously. So you should support whatever outcome, whatever happens. You have to support your children. You created them. You are basically their God. And if you don't support your children are going to be lost. And I was blessed enough to have a wonderful mother. My father wasn't there in my life. Always, I mean, was never really in any of my siblings' life, really. So I don't take it personal. But without my mother's support, who knows, I probably wouldn't have been here. So I really think that is one of the most important things ever.
And building on the positives right now, Aiden and Giselle obviously have pursued very different professional paths. But I'm equally amazed by them and many other people in the book, like, how did you do this? And in your case, Giselle, You started modeling in around 1999, 2000, as a teenager. And so far as I can tell, there was no other transgender woman on the face of the earth doing high fashion modeling. And so it's extraordinary that that happened. And I know that it sort of happened because you were just walking down the street as a beautiful woman in New York City, and modeling agents came up to you and said, "Are you a model?" But not a single one of them thought you were transgender. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know you were always very upfront. I'm a transgender.
Yeah, I was always very upfront with people that ever approached me and asked me, or I would just, even the agents that would approach me in the streets of New York City, I would tell them right away. And there was this one lady that I bumped into, her name was Nayar McDonald, and she saw me and she was like, "Are you a model?" And I was like, "No, I never thought that I could possibly have that profession because I was transgendered," and at that time it was basically non-existent. So it was from that, but I was always honest, and at that time it was impossible, but for me it worked out.
But when you told her you were transgender, she said, "I want to shoot you anyway."
Oh yeah, well, I told her specifically, other ones denied me, but this is one lady who said, "You know what, it doesn't matter, I'll shoot you, we'll see what happens," and that's how it started. And after that I just landed, I kept landing magazines, which was really groundbreaking because I was landing hip-hop magazines where there was no such thing as gays or transsexuals in these magazines. Russell Simmons was the owner of this magazine, so it was groundbreaking back then in the 90s. So I started from that, and then I moved up and up and up, and I started doing a lot of work. I've always been very upfront of who I am and very, "You have to accept me." That's always been my attitude. Because I respect people, and I expect the same thing.
Right. But even with that, being up front all the time, lots of people in the industry said, "Don't tell anybody you're transgender.
Yeah,
you'll get a lot more work if you just, you know, don't do that." But you've been able to build an amazing career, and most recently in Vogue magazine, Vanity Fair, on the current cover of Candy, the gatefold cover, with lots of other beautiful transgender women, and have achieved just so much, which seemed impossible. But you proved that it is not impossible, and you've made it happen. Now, on the other hand, Aidan, I'm amazed that you have been able to get gender diversity going and that you're at Seattle Children's Hospital and you have other locations and conferences around the country. How the heck did you do that?
At one point prior to my gender transition, I was working in a construction job, and a person told me, "Whatever you do, don't tell them you're a lesbian." So for 3 months, I did not tell them about my sexual orientation. I did not tell them that I had a wife at home with a child, that we were about to have a baby. It was the worst 3 months of my life. And at some point, I just couldn't take it anymore, and I disclosed to someone, who disclosed to absolutely everyone the next day, about my sexual orientation. But what happened was really powerful. Everyone treated me so much more openly and compassionately, and these construction guys started showing me how to do things rather than say, "Just stand over there." So I swore never again was I going to hide who I was. So fast forward a number of years, my gender transition shows up, and I thought, I'm just going to find my way through this. And by sharing my story with whoever, however, whenever, it's been bumpy, it's been complex, and yet I found that it has almost universally brought people closer. I think I can count on one hand the number of people who got uncomfortable and turned around and walked away. And so sharing that story, and sharing that story that's truthful, not necessarily the cookie cutter story, "Oh, I was a man trapped in a woman's body." That's a really simplistic story that everyone else likes to hear. Not my story. So speaking that truth can really help. And the work that I do with families, the work that I do in schools, I share what I've learned. I don't always share my story, especially in work with schools. But it's frankly a miracle that I can step into all of the elementary schools that I do and do trainings there as an openly transgender person. I have people all around the country saying, "How do you do that?" I'm not really sure, but I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, there's no script for it, right? You're improvising that script.
And you know what it is? Here's the heart. you know what, wide open. Throw your shots. If you're ready to do that, then I will deal with what happens. But so far, people don't throw those shots. They open with their own hearts. And that is the single most powerful thing, I think, that does make a difference.
Well, I'm really glad that you're doing this work because it is life-saving work. And as you've pointed out, even with the greatest support from your family, once you step into society, beginning with, you know, preschool, elementary school, it gets really tough. And I know you had extraordinary challenges. You had great support from your mother and within your family. You grew up in Harlem. And as soon as you got to school, before you were identifying as transgender, you had a lot of trouble with bullying. And then there's the neighborhood itself. There's the larger community. So what was that like for you growing up? And what is it like, amazingly, to this very day, when you go back to that neighborhood? You live in Midtown Manhattan, but if you go up to where your mother lives, you're still subjected to bullying because people in that neighborhood know that you were born a boy, even though obviously you pass 100%, but you are still bullied or harassed when someone has that knowledge.
Yeah, I was always bullied and harassed growing up, so it was very difficult for me. Although I had my family support, my mom's support, and my sister's support, I still had a very difficult time growing up. I was, you know, suicidal at some points in my life. I never told anybody, but it's good to talk about it and let people know for they can understand that they're not the only ones that go through these issues. The other day I went to my mom's neighborhood and a guy just came into the store and was like, you need to get out of this store now. You don't belong here. And I could not believe it. I felt like I was in a movie. I was like, I was with my mother and this guy is just telling me to get out of the store. And I know I was raised in that neighborhood, so people know me as a child, yes, but that doesn't give somebody the right to treat somebody like that. And so it was, yeah, I still go through harassment in my old neighborhood. I mean, I don't go through harassment really basically anywhere else, but there is a problem with people knowing that you're transgendered and they do harass you, especially in certain neighborhoods and places in the country.
And Aidan, what do you do when you're working in the schools to begin to try to really sensitize teachers and administrators? And then how do you influence the community at large or sensitize even, you know, the neighbors of some of the children and families that you're working with? Because that's really where the rubber meets the road once you're out in the world.
I think it's a matter of appealing to people's desire to be treated in a certain way, respect, kindness, compassion. It's helpful for adults to understand this issue by viewing it in children, because it takes, in some respects, it takes the politics out of it, takes the sex out of it, and it makes it pure. I don't think it's right that that's the only way to get there, but it is a pretty powerful way to arrive at understanding. So what I try to do is just point to their kids and show them their kids over and over. Don't look at me, keep looking at them. You know how they are. You understand them and you care about them. So step up. The second thing is giving them understanding and validation for the fact that we don't know how to create an environment where someone isn't teased because their gender is different. We all grew up, and you teased the sissy, and you teased the girl that was too masculine. That was the norm. We grew up knowing that if we knew how to fix it, we'd be doing that. But we don't know what it looks like. If we don't know what it looks like, we can't create it. Except that we can, because it means if a boy wants to wear a dress to school, we have to remember that girls at one point wanted to wear pants to school. Oh, that's right. You'd be surprised at how many people are not looking at it in that simple of a context. So just presenting those kinds of scenarios.
I think the ironic thing, too, about gender identity is that it's a little bit like the Edgar Allan Poe story of the purloined letter, where this letter, nobody can find it, but it's hiding in plain sight, and it's obvious. Because to me, it's obvious that everybody's gender identity evolves and exists on a spectrum. And if we just think of how different all the men we know are and all the women we know, but there isn't really a language in place to describe those differences, so it's almost as if they don't exist. And we only really see it when there's this significant difference of being transgender and having a variance between your gender identity and your biological gender. But what still perplexes me is that I think even though it's extraordinarily challenging, we cannot minimize it in any way, to identify as transgender if you were born a girl, but you really identify as a boy, I keep wondering, why is it so radioactive, and why does it trigger violent reactions if biological boys identify as girls? And I'll mention one other person in the book, Ian Harvey, who happens to be a trans man comedian, now has a role on Transparent, said that he thinks that spontaneous attacks on the street against gay men are actually gender-based. And if you think about it, that's almost always true unless two men are walking down the street holding hands. If you're just walking down the street, how does anybody know you're gay? But if you are somehow communicating what we will call stereotypically in the culture femininity, or you are the sissy, then you are subject to attack. And I know from speaking with you, Giselle, too, that if you're a very attractive woman and you're approached by a straight guy who's attracted to you, and that person finds out you're transgender, that's a very dangerous space to be in. I know one person even threatened your life. He was attracted to you, and then he wanted to kill you in the next second. Why is this? I don't have an answer. I'm hoping maybe some of the people here tonight, when we open it up, will share your own thoughts. But why do you think it is just so radioactive if a biological boy identifies in a feminine way?
I don't know.
I love honesty.
I could speculate a whole bunch, but ultimately I don't. Is there a hand? Oh.
Honestly, I think it's a myopic result of male privilege that you would see that femininity in males attracts more violence towards those individuals who present that in society than is regularly visited upon most women throughout the world on a continuous basis. So I think the first thing you've got to recognize is that violence against women is epidemic on a global scale. That will inform, possibly, your observation of what you see as heightened focus on the feminine male in society.
Well, that is certainly true, and it brings up another very difficult topic to talk about. We were talking in the green room a little bit about this, because if you're transgender, let's say you're a transgender man, in a sense, you gain male privilege, right? And if you become a transgender woman, you lose male privilege. And if you're gender queer, you just confuse everybody. And I've noticed that just wearing pink fingernail polish is one of the most disruptive things that you can possibly do on the face of the earth. And if I look at this as abstract art, I can't figure out why people are, what? Sometimes it's funny. I'll get in line at Starbucks, and I'm about 10 feet away from the cash register. Oh, I'm sorry.
It inspires violence because people are used to males being the one to acquire resources, and males are not allowed to be the attractive ones if they are the ones that are the homogenous ones that are not supposed to elicit attraction.
Okay. Yeah, I apologize. I didn't see you raising your hand. The lights are bright. But it is, when you drill down to the bottom of bigotry and hatred, you end up just saying to yourself, really, what is going on here? Because you're talking about human identity in that case, and it kind of disappears into the complexity of what is it that makes us human. And sometimes, I was about to say, sometimes it could be funny. Like if I'm 10 feet away from the cash register, you're next, madam, and I come right up there and say, what would you like, sir? And it just shifts like that. But we obviously have these images of what it means to be male and female. And we're sort of stuck in these categories of imagining what you should be like. But I'm just wondering why it leads people to violence and how we can better educate everyone to think twice before you give in to that instantaneous reaction.
That moment of disclosure or discovery is profound. It's one I've learned to talk my way through. I'm sure Giselle can speak to that easily. There's nothing sure in life but death and taxes and gender. We expect it to be only this, no crossing over, no blend, no saying, hey, I'm a third gender or fourth. That's against the rules. When a person hears something different than what they have just perceived in an instant and moved forward without ever pondering ever again, we yank the carpet out from under that person. And their brain cannot, their neocortex cannot keep up with their reptilian brain response. And so it sounds kind of funny, and yet that's the moment of extreme danger.
Yes.
Where someone reacts with fight or flight or freezing. Those are the moments that are so difficult to navigate, and those are the moments when especially trans women are murdered. The Transgender Day of Remembrance is just a recitation of the names of everyone, not everyone actually, a percentage of people who've been murdered in the last year. And it is 90, I don't even know what percentage, but the greatest percentage of trans women, especially, and trans women of color. So it's so layered. When I say I don't know, that's not exactly true, but we don't have 5 hours to really dig in and explore.
Yes. And in fact, Elon Nettles was murdered, just want to mention, 2 blocks from your mother's house 2 years ago in Harlem, and that crime was never solved. And your friend, Lorena Escalera, was
burned to death.
Yeah. She was strangled and burned to death. People saw 2 men leaving the apartment. That happened about 3 years
ago.
And
I just want to point out that, you know, I have had many trans women friends that have been murdered. These are just 2 cases, but I think I can literally say at least 10 of my friends have been killed or committed suicide. So this is something that needs to be talked about. And there's not that many of us.
Yeah. Well, the statistic, which is astounding, then I'll give you... go ahead.
I'm going to start with something very controversial, but sure. Men can be really dumb. And there's
I'll believe that.
You know, I need a ponytail holder for my hair. Well, here's a pink one. Oh, my God, every gay guy is going to come on to me. I mean, hello. So this guy comes up to you. He's homophobic, because most of them are, and finds out that you were a man, and now he thinks he's gay. And he hates you for it.
Yeah.
And that's why he killed you.
Yes. Well, in fact, those are the circumstances of Elon Nettles' murder. She was walking down the street with 2 other transgender women. It was a group of guys. One of them expressed attraction toward her. And when he found out she was transgender, something happened, which is still not clear, but she was dead 5 minutes later, and this took place across the street from a police station with cameras all around, and no one has been brought to justice in this, and they keep saying they're working on it. So we're just about, and I'm glad that we're already having the conversation, we're just about done this segment. I think this is the perfect way for me to ask this other question. I'd love to get your perspective on it. Because I do lots and lots of interviews all the time, and sometimes they start off with, well, aren't we making all kinds of progress? Look at marriage equality. And that is tremendous. It's an unbelievable breakthrough. But to me, I have to say it represents tolerance. It represents people saying, well, I guess you have the right to marry the person of your choice. And maybe it is because so many gay people have come out, and now there is a gay person that just about everybody knows, or if somebody in your family or a friend or a colleague at work. But there's still very few people across the whole country who know transgender people. And therefore, it's very much easier to objectify. So, you know, I think we're sort of at a level of tolerance with respect to some issues, but including gay people, we're far off from even acceptance, which is still kind of condescending. If you are in a position of privilege, oh, well, I accept you. You should be grateful for that. And we're way off when it comes to equality, a recognition that we're all the same human beings from that standpoint. And then celebration, that would be another thing. But I'd love to hear from everybody on where you think we really are, because with progress comes backlash at all times. And so having said that, I'd love to open it up. And actually, if people could walk up to the mic. I know it's a little bit of a scary walk. If you don't want to do that, that's fine. But it's easier for everybody to hear if you do that. So we'd love, yes, go ahead.
They're recording. So if you can.
You don't have to. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So a couple of thoughts while people were talking is that my sense within myself as well is when we encounter somebody who's different than us, it leads us to reflect on whatever that trait is that we're attending to. So when I meet people who see that my gender is different than they're thinking or wanting it to be, I think that the reason they have a problem, if they have a problem with it, is because we don't like to consider these kinds of things with respect to ourselves, and our mere presence causes that reflection, and it creates this kind of discomfort. So, and then the other thought when you were asking about why, maybe in some ways, trans women particularly kind of, you know, elicit a reaction, I think it's because our culture is values so much the masculine and has for so very long. And I think there's a sense of like, why the heck would you want to embrace the feminine? Why would you want to identify as a woman? That seems like a crazy thing. And I think that, you know, women expressing the feminine have been labeled hysterical and all kinds of disparaging things, meaning they're not embodying traits that have been thought of as masculine, that they aren't maybe seeming as rational or whatever it might be. So I think that one way with regard to gender issues, that the more we can become proponents of the feminine value in our culture, I think that it will help to create a balance in many other ways as well. So I mean, I think in some ways it kind of speaks to what you were saying before. So,
thank you so much. I think you're absolutely right that mixed in with the complexity of people's responses to gender identity, really are a whole set of attitudes that men have toward women that need to be examined. And there is built-in hostility, I think, when that is questioned. And it certainly is a look in the mirror, however distorted, I think, when a man who's not confident in his sexual orientation or gender identity is presented with an attraction to someone who is different.
Yeah, I don't have any answers. I work with little children, preschoolers. I've worked in daycares, I'm a nanny. In my faith community, I've taught our preschoolers, and we now have a 6-year-old boy, one of triplets. They've all three been wearing dresses for worship. He does not wear dresses to kindergarten. I asked his dad. Working in early childhood education, you learn, you know, to say the names of body parts, be very positive, and you're always saying, yes, little girls grow up to be women, and women used to be little girls, and boys grow into men. I don't say that real often. I don't have anything else to say. But we got to start with really little kids making the world safer.
Thank you so much.
I use they, them pronouns. I will accept he, him. I will not accept she, his. It feels like an insult to me to be called she, and I think that reflects poorly upon our society. I don't identify as a person either, but I will say that what is gender thing? Gender is definitely a fluid concept, and this bothers a lot of people. It is a changing, transitory thing. Someone is not necessarily pressured to identify Like if people want you to foreclose on an identity, then that is actually a dangerous thing. It's better to let people be what they are and what they tell you. And if you follow the money, like for example, why would somebody fly into a rage, have an existential crisis, and murder somebody just because they found themselves attracted? Well, it's all about power. It's about they believe that they will be kept out of power if they indulge in that. And by, you know, killing or making themselves into a criminal and stuff, like they're sort of given some deniability to the hires up and such. And that's all I've got.
Well, I think it's really disturbing to think that on the one hand, as Janet Mock has said, passing, quote unquote, is fundamental to survival, right? So if you walk down the street and you're attired, I'm speaking in stereotypical terms and what people would associate with a woman's attire, but people perceive that you're a biological man, you are in danger of being attacked. On the other hand, if you're a beautiful transgender woman and you're just having a quiet drink by yourself at a bar and a guy comes up and hits on you, you're put in this ridiculous situation of having to reveal something very intimate 10 seconds after this person has introduced themselves, or they have the wrong idea of who you are. And as you said, in one instance, when you immediately told a gentleman that you were transgender, he said, "I hope you're," as you once told me.
Well, yeah, I was dating a guy, and but you see, I don't use that as an example because I was a teenager and I was not upfront with him immediately.
Okay.
So I believe, since that situation happened, that you should always be upfront. For you can never, ever get into this dangerous situation. So I believe that. But there are guys, you know, that even they know, but they still have, they're just uncomfortable with themselves. They still have an issue with you being who you are and them being attracted to you. And if you say something wrong and if you do something that they don't, you know, agree with, they get really mad.
But the attraction is there too, together with the anger.
Yeah, of course, the attraction is there. So that's what makes it even worse.
This term keeps on coming up in the conversation called biological gender. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if there might... it seems like we pay a lot of service to the medical community as if it somehow has some validifying opinion about our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's actually built into the system. Patriarchy has a heavy method of control of female bodies. And it's the concept of sexed bodies in general. Has been sort of directed at control over reproductive rights, female bodies. And so I would challenge you to perhaps expand the dialectic, the language, from beyond a sense of biological determinism and call it like it is. We are born into this world with assigned genders. We have no input into that. We have no choice at that point. And then as we grow and we seek out and we learn about ourselves and our bodies and our relation to the world, we choose ourselves and generate for ourselves a gendered identity. And those two things and the conflict that presents in society along lines of control of bodies is what this is really about. To assume that there's a biological determination of gender is I think...
Right. I wouldn't say that that was implicit in my use of those terms, but I'm always searching for better terms.
Mm-hmm.
What I am saying is simply that people, most people that I've encountered, think of gender as being fixed based on that initial assignment. A delivering physician looks at a child, looks at their genitals, basically, and in one case says this is a boy, in another case this is a girl, in another case if you're intersex would say, I'm not sure. Sorry?
Can I share a quick story?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
About the way that it can be? I know a family who has a transgender child, a transgender boy. He has a younger sibling. This child grew up having gender expansive language in the home and understanding the notion of gender identity and that you can't really know somebody's gender unless you ask them or they tell you. So this child at I think he was probably about 5 years old, in the back seat of the car with his mom driving. They pull up to a stoplight, and the light turns green, but mom isn't driving forward. So the kid says, it's green, why aren't you going? Mom says, well, there's a woman crossing the road, so I'm waiting for her to get across the crosswalk here. He goes, do you know her? She said, no, why? Why do you ask? Well, you just called her a woman. So you must know her. That's how children can see it. It's so clear to them. We have to start when we are incorporating those early messages about gender. The same person that reacts violently as an adult got messages about gender very, very early. And that same child wished that he could have put the pink hair tie in his hair. But he got a message from someone, somehow, that that was not okay and it was really bad, wrong, shameful. And trillion messages beyond that. By the time you're an adult, how can you navigate all those in an instant?
A minute ago you said something about passing and not being able to pass and stuff, and I came out as barber 20 years ago, and I wouldn't pass in a dark alley, and never. And I've never made any attempt to change my voice. I've lived in 20 years here in Seattle and had a successful career in real estate, which is a public thing. And I think I've done that and managed to do that through being an open heart. I'm honest about who I am, and this is who I am. I don't wear a lot of makeup, and I wear dresses. Otherwise, people assume I'm a guy or weird or whatever. And so this is who I am, and that's what I am. And I walk around Seattle, and I don't fear for my life because I look at people and I say, this is who I am. Who are you? I've worked in the homeless community and some of the most bigoted places you can go. And it's a matter of, I'm honest. And I recently moved into a retirement center for young folks. And moving in there, I'm one of the younger ones, fortunately. And a lot of the people in there are in their 80s. And these people never even thought of me as a woman. They knew I was a man wearing a dress. And after many, many stories and many talking, I'm very well accepted there. I'm the president of the council and all this stuff. And it's just by being open. And I think that's the thing so many people miss. It's not necessarily passing or not passing, because I wished I could pass, but hell, I ain't never gonna happen. One other thing, my granddaughter, when she first discovered the boys and girls things, asked me a question. She said, you're my mom's dad, but you're Barbara. And I said, yes. And she said, okay. And ever since then, she's defended me as Barbara. I mean, she'll attack, but thank you.
Does she call you grandma or grandpa?
They actually call me Barb. I made a deal with my daughter. My daughter, you know, I said, I'll always be your dad. She loves me dearly, sticks up for me, does all of that, supports me. But it's Barb. It's just because she can't call her dad, and kids call me Barb, because they got so many grandmas now.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Yes. I want to thank you, first of all. This is a really safe room, and I feel that all of us really care about this issue and want to do the right thing. And there was a movie I just watched called No Dumb Questions. Anybody seen that? It's an amazing film. It's about three young children who are you know, really grappling with and trying to understand their uncle becoming a woman. And I strongly recommend it just as a really helpful, you know, resource. But I run a nonprofit environmental education organization, and we serve thousands of children each year. And when one of our staff members that have been hired seasonally shared the pronouns that they want it used, and expressed that they are gender neutral, and it sent us all on this, wow, okay, we're here. What do we do? How do we do this? How do we make it safe for everybody, for every age that comes aboard, whether you're a third grader who doesn't even, like, whoa, what, huh? You know, to, like, you know, everybody all the way up through the different grades, to our public that comes aboard, that they could be, you know, folks from Eastern Washington who vote perhaps not Democrat, you know, and so we're on a journey, and I'm here to say that I don't know anything, and that I think as an organization, I checked around with my other nonprofit executive directors, and nobody else knew anything either. And so I just want to say we want some help, really, in doing the right thing in the world. We love humans. That's why we do nonprofit work with humans. So anyway, that's what I have for you. Well,
thank you so much for that, because I think humility is one of the greatest signs of intelligence of all, right? Saying I don't know. And I'm really interested in language and how often it breaks down and how often we try to say something and it comes out wrong. What are the right words? And I think this is a very safe place. And I think once you're honest and you can have that conversation, there is that opportunity for acceptance. The world, though, is not a safe place. And there, most of the time, isn't any language, right? As you're just walking down the street, and most people are strangers to one another. And so those are the kinds of things that I think each in our own way we're trying to address in our own lives, in our professions, and finding ways to sort of bridge that gap. And, you know, it involves taking a risk, like, coming here tonight, sitting up here, struggling to put into words what is maybe ineffable and what is personal. It's very difficult, but I guess the whole point of what I'm trying to do is to say that's what we have to start trying to do, particularly when we don't know anything, and particularly maybe if we've become aware of some of our assumptions that are wrong, or that, you know, to your point, why are you referring to that human being as a woman? You must know her very well. No, I just met her for the first time. Oh, sorry. So I think the more we can become aware of what we are doing, the better the opportunity is for awareness and for finding language. And there are huge, huge challenges. You mentioned the medical community, the mental health community. One of the participants in the Human Agenda is Dr. Karis Masarella, a transgender woman who's an emergency physician in Hamilton, Ontario. She's done a couple of TEDx talks. One is specifically about how the medical community pathologizes transgender people. Yet these are the people you're thinking you need to go to. And she says that she has a huge practice now of primarily transgender people because they're all afraid to go to the doctor, basically. You're going to go to the doctor for flu-like symptoms and be told that you're mentally ill, for example. For decades, gender identity disorder, pathologizing who people are as human beings. Now the so-called kinder, gentler dysphoria, you know, you're uncomfortable with your body. Well, let me tell you, just about everybody is. There wouldn't be medical spas, there wouldn't be, you know, plastic surgeons, but, you know, there wouldn't even be hair salons or cosmetics companies. Everybody wants to kind of sort of look different from the way they think they look, and that's not considered to be a disorder. That's very much what it is to be human, but if it has to do with gender identity, then suddenly it becomes a disorder. So these are things that I think we're all struggling with, and it's really opportunities like getting together here tonight and chatting about this that I just think open up new possibilities for understanding and empathy. Again, I'm just about finding that common ground. Nobody has all the answers or maybe even any answers, but if we can start to ask some of the right questions, I think that we can get closer to where we need to be as human beings. And anybody else with a couple of...
Been standing here for a while.
Yes, I'm sorry. I wasn't looking that way.
Hi, I work for Seattle Public Library, and if you want to watch No Dumb Questions, come check it out from the library. It's a difficult film to find obtain a copy of, but I've convinced the library to have a copy. We've had it in our collection for the past year, and we have many other transgender resources, both physical items, books, DVDs, but also streaming video. Also, if you need to find resources, I can help you with that. I work at the Capitol Hill branch. I have a background in transgender community activism. I have a degree in transgender studies, and I worked for a national organization in Washington, D.C. So I've got a lot of background that you could draw on to try and locate resources. But also, you can come into Seattle Public Library branch and ask a librarian for help locating materials. So I encourage you to do that.
Thank you so much. Yes?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you a bit about myself first, but I also want to bring up the question of violence against LGBT people. I grew up in a family. My mother had 9 children. I had 7 sisters. I grew up around girls, and they were all wearing dresses, and the only clothes that were around to play with and to play in were their dresses. I was called a sissy from the time I was 5 years old, even in grade school. And my identity, I'm male, I know I'm male, but it's crazy when kids get called, when boys get called sissies, they feel completely isolated from the world. And it's very strange. And you also mentioned that we're going backwards instead of moving forward. I feel we were much, much more accepting of gay people and even transgender people in the 70s and 80s. And it's gone back. We've gone backwards. I'm surprised how far back we've gone. Also, just yesterday, Bloomberg News posted something online specifically about Seattle, specifically about Capitol Hill. And we all know how Capitol Hill is becoming this cesspool of $100,000 a year Amazon employees. And all those big condos up there, I swear, are filled with Amazon and Facebook employees. And they also mentioned that the number of violent acts against LGBT people in 2013, it was a certain number, in the first 3 months of 2014, it was twice that number. Now, they put it down to all these white dudes going around to all the, there are 200 bars on Capitol Hill now. And these white men search out people they think are gay, and they beat on them, or they assault them. And when I got out here to go to college, Capitol Hill was the gay neighborhood, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean, was the gay neighborhood. And now it's supposedly becoming less so. But the fact that there's so much violence now against the LGBT community is very scary to me, because we have these cliches about how we're supposed to look and how we're supposed to act. And I see fellows walking around, they're obviously 20, 21 year old college guys, who exhibit all the attitudes and the voice and the way of speaking and the way of acting that I used to consider faggy kinds of attitudes and practices. So we are completely confused. We're getting more and more confused rather than growing into something that's much more civilized. And it really bugs me, especially the violence against the LGBT community. And that kind of thing has to stop. And you also mentioned that children are much more open and much more accepting of, say, a trans person than an adult. You have to look to children. My hope for this country is with people under the age of 20. Because if you're 20 to 40 in this country, you are pretty messed up. I'm not kidding. Because having lived through the Bush years, you know, and try to make sense of what's going on with gender identity, with economic identity. It was hell, you know. But things have got to change, and we've got to realize, like you said, we're all human beings, and we all need some kind of affection, whether it's from a person who's homosexual or I don't even like that word anymore, gay, lesbian, bisexual, or trans. We are so in need of getting close to each other. We are so disassociated from each other that a person's gender identity is really one of the last things we should ask about. Are you a moral person? Do you have high standards? Do you have empathy? Do you have sympathy for other people? That's much more important to me than arguing about someone's gender identity.
I'd love to make a comment, if I may. I don't feel like the LGBT community is any more of a safe space than anywhere else. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to assume that LGBT community is a safe space. I've experienced an incredible amount of hardships from within the community. I have encountered so many people who have said, well, of course the gay and lesbian community is going to be supportive and understanding of you as a trans person. And I said, I don't know what planet you live on, but that is not my experience in gay and lesbian community. We are all human beings capable of amazing beauty and horrible ugliness. That's within every one of us. Right. One of the things that I want to do in terms, with respect to my work and how I go about it, is to stop having that focal point be on that transgender child. Well, let's all figure out what that little thing needs. And instead, continue to turn the mirror to everyone else and say, look, you all need to take a look and see why you care so much about what that child does, and that you expect this child to step in line for you. And then you'll completely ignore that child after that. But in the interim, it's global news. There was a group of nuns at a school in Europe somewhere, I can't remember, a number of years ago, that was teaching the boys to sit down to pee. Germany?
It would have to be Germany.
I'm not sure. But ultimately, who's cleaning the bathrooms? Well, the nuns are. So everybody sits to pee. Why am I hearing about it in Seattle, Washington? But it did make international news. So I really want to turn the lens outward. Even at the WPATH conference, a number of professionals, this is the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, a number of those professionals who attend say, well, the support of a child under the age of 16 is really controversial. And they all say controversial. There's no, and we should look into it. And I'm saying we should actually give that a go. Because what I'm seeing is not controversy at all. I'm seeing children thrive in place of having.
Do you think calling it controversial is an attempt to stop the conversation?
100%.
Or start it?
Stop. Absolutely to stop it. The other thing that I wanted to say has to do with, if I may, you jump in if I'm not saying this correct, but you and I both go out there in the world and we talk about our lives and our experiences. And we do that because it makes a difference. And it's how we are deciding to move through the world. I want to make a world where the ability to immediately, instantaneously, on the spot, verbalize transgender 101, 201, 301, in every single instance, every situation does not have to be what a person does just to live their lives. I want a person to be able to have to never talk about it if they don't ever want to talk about it. And then that their gender does not have to be the focal point of their lives. So while I love what I do, I think
I that's what I see from and hear from you, is being that voice that helps make change. Part of that activism is about providing more options for everyone else.
Yes, and I think it's important for to bring knowledge to people, because that's obviously what changes people. And unfortunately, a lot of times people start having these conversations when big things happen, like, you know, like a transgendered actress, a transgender model, you know. I think that's not a positive thing, but it is, because it gets the community speaking, and it makes the world speak. Like Laverne Cox was on the cover of Time magazine, so it's making the world speak about transgendered women, and that was basically non-existent. So another reason why I want to go, you know, and share my story is to help others any way that I can, because others have helped me with their stories, and I feel like I should do the same. And, you know, I really want to go into a room full of bigots, really. I think that's where I would really feel that I'm making a change, if they're willing to listen, you know. But that's what I always wanted to do. Joe thinks I'm crazy for that, but yeah.
I'll go too.
Oh, there's a long gentleman.
Do we have any more time, or are we done? Well, okay. Well, we can continue the conversation. Why don't you speak? Yeah, but I just want to emphasize, it doesn't have to end here with the, you know, us on the stage and you down here. We're going to be hanging out and chatting and talking, and if anybody wants a book, we'll be signing it. But we'll be continuing for like another half hour or so, just chatting and talking. But I'm sorry. No, why don't we have two more comments, and then we'll go into the more informal part of the evening.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your thoughts. I've really enjoyed listening to you. Two quick questions. Well, one more of a comment. What can we learn from other cultures? I'm thinking primarily of India, where I grew up, and a country that recently passed employment non-discrimination for transgender persons. What can we learn from other cultures to move forward in our own country with transgender rights? And to piggyback, the second question is to piggyback on what Aidan just said. I really do find myself living more and more in a polarized LGBT community, where the issue of marriage that you've mentioned is really, as great as it is, has become a polarizing issue, particularly for queer people of color and queer people living in different economic circumstances. So what I've been struggling with is, you know, as this issue takes greater time and resources and precedence, critical issues like employment non-discrimination, housing non-discrimination for queer people of color, for transgender persons, those issues are kind of being sidelined. I'd like to hear from each of you your vision for where transgender rights need to be. Two critical issues that you would address in the next, I don't know, 5-10 years to move the dial on transgender rights.
Thanks a lot. You know, I'm so in the moment that it's hard for me to look ahead. I look ahead, I look around, and I get overwhelmed and sometimes crumble. So just to say one thing that I would like is that this notion, this concept, this aspect of that's called gender identity is something that we can, that if everyone at least understood that as a concept, that would be fantastic. Whether, of course, when I'm really dreaming, people would say yes, and I think it's a great, believable, acceptable, celebratory concept. Now, that's the future I'd love to see, but if people even knew what it was, it'd be a great start.
Yeah, I think the ultimate goal is celebration, but to me, it's all about survival. You know, if people aren't safe, you don't have anything. And There are people I love that I worry about every single second of the day. And so I think we need to start there. Obviously, the workplace, having food, clothing, and shelter, all of those issues are fundamental, but safety comes first. Just in 10 seconds on the other culture thing, in the book, Hina Wan Kalu was from a traditional Hawaiian culture. What I learned from her was that what made a difference was the traditional value of respect for all human beings. And she was the caretaker in her family, taking care of her mother. And her gender identity, and she has a different concept of what it means to be transgender. It's kind of a two-spirit floating between the two gender binaries of male and female. Those are her words. But she was respected in her family and allowed to thrive because she was the person taking care. And I don't know that we really have that value. You know, the extended family taking care of your grandparents. And that was the difference maker for her growing up.
Wow, this is a very difficult question because internationally, we all know that, you know, some countries it's illegal to be gay and you can stone people to death in some countries. I'm trying to make a difference still in New York City. And everyone thinks that New York City is like this open city. No, there's bigots in New York City. So I'm trying just to start with one person at a time. I think the world is a little bit much, although I want to make a change in the world. And I think that you make these changes by reaching one person at a time. I think that's the best thing that we can do.
I thought that was an awesome question. The first one they asked, it was about other countries, other cultures, and I was just thinking, I had almost forgotten what I was going to say because I'm like super autistic, but anyway, like China chooses their celebrities based on like who's made the scientific and technological advancements, which is like in many ways a very better way to do it than we do here. But like, so here, like it'll make a difference when, you know, a model or performer of some sort is transgender, you know, in another place. Like, what about India, for example? Those people have been very spiritual for a long time and been allowed their spiritual expression, unlike in some other places. And look for, you know, your trans wizard over there. So that's all I got.
Okay, so thank you again, everyone. Let's continue chatting. We'll be over in the next room signing any books if you'd like to buy them. And just hanging out and talking for a little while longer.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. If you value this episode or this series, please share your appreciation by posting a good review. It'll help other listeners find us. Writer Joe Wenke spoke at Town Hall Seattle on April 17, 2015. He was joined on stage by transgender model and activist Giselle Alicia and Seattle Children's Hospital gender specialist Aiden Key. This conversation was presented by Town Hall and the University Bookstore as part of the Civic Series. Thank you again to Kevin Mitchum for our recording. Tune in next week for more great talks. For Speakers Forum, KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm John O'Brien.